How do you do, sir? How do you do, ma'am? Glad to have you with us. Won't you take a seat?
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. That was Clifton Fadiman, and this is United Nations Day. This is also the 10th anniversary of the UN. The United Nations has been in business for only 10 years, but the business of diplomacy has been going on for some time. We thought we'd ask Clifton Fadiman to take you on a short trip through the land of diplomacy. So have a seat, won't you? Right here at the conference table, while United Nations Radio presents Clifton Fadiman in Your Seat at the Table.
It's the year 1900 or thereabouts, about half a century ago, and we are on a diplomatic errand. The gilt-encrusted, tapestried walls of a great chancellery surround us. We're in the company of the ambassador of Country X, who's just been ushered into the office of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Country Y. The preliminary courtesies have been coldly and crisply exchanged, for the ambassador's business is tense and serious.
Excellence.
At the turn of the century, French was still the language exclusively used in diplomacy. The ambassador is speaking.
J'ai reçu l'ordre d'obtenir de votre excellence l'assurance que les clauses secrètes du traité de Barcelone ne seront plus l'objet de violations.
I am instructed to seek the assurances of your excellency that no further violation of the secret clauses of the treaty of Barcelona is contemplated.
Faute de quoi, je me vois obligé de vous faire savoir qu'une mobilisation partielle de la flotte sera la seule mesure à laquelle mon gouvernement.
Failing which, I am regretfully compelled to inform you that a partial mobilization of the fleet will be the only recourse left to my government.
Excellence, j'ai l'honneur de vous saluer.
You see, the business of countries with one another was carried on, as it had been for centuries, in the privacy of chancelleries and embassies. Much of it still is today, but much of it is not. All sorts of things happen in the open, and all sorts of things happen as routine in the diplomatic world of today, which would have caused both excellencies in the preceding scene to have gasped. Come with us briefly on a diplomatic mission of the present day.
We're here at the pigsty of Anyang Laboratory, and we have quite a few pigs, baby pigs, mama pigs, papa pigs, all ready to be inoculated with the hog cholera vaccine. Are you ready with your needle?
Oh, yes.
That must hurt. Let's move on to the next one now. Ouch. Oh, this is quite a big pig. He looks very stubborn. That's done. Well, that hurts a little, but you'll be all right. Thank you very much, Dr. Yu.
Don't let's mislead you. We're not saying that a great question of war and peace can be sized up against a pig being inoculated in an Asian veterinary laboratory. But what we are saying is that we live in the age of a new diplomacy, a diplomacy of which the white walls of the laboratory are as valid an expression as the tapestry chancellery, which leads us for a moment to a consideration of the word diplomacy itself.
Diplomacy, let me see. Diplomacy. The management of skill in managing international relations.
And we say that diplomacy is new today. Well, what is new in diplomacy? A United Nations observer supplies part of the answer.
Well, to begin with, a lot of the diplomacy today is carried out right in the open, as you've just heard. If one country doesn't like what another one is doing, there are no longer notes threatening to mobilize the fleet, but the matter may come before the Security Council, if it amounts to a threat to the peace, or before the General Assembly. Much of the international business of the day, then, is carried on in the United Nations. Often some of this business is talked over in private among the member delegations before it's brought into a conference room. When it is, the United Nations is pledged to open session. The occasions when a UN organ itself will close its doors are few and far between. Of course, there are some people who believe that all this public diplomacy isn't necessarily a good thing, that private negotiation might often bring about better results. There are others, though, who would like some mixture of the two, public and private diplomacy. But the result of all this is that issues which come before the United Nations now must be argued out in the light of principles of the United Nations Charter, and not necessarily in terms of national self-interest alone. In fact, it's now incumbent upon member nations to show that the solution that they're pressing for would best serve the purposes agreed to at San Francisco 10 years ago. And foremost among those purposes is the ideal of a peaceful world. That's another essentially unique thing about diplomacy today, the character of this thing we call peace. This search for peace is an immense one, of course, and it lands us up squarely among the root causes of war, disease, poverty, oppression, ignorance. Each of these is in turn a very large fight indeed.
Thank you. Now, let's take this matter of scope, for instance. The things which come to the United Nations for consideration amaze even those who deal with them daily. Not only pig pens in Asia, but maternal welfare clinics in Yugoslavia, fundamental education centers in Liberia, the construction of hydroelectric dams in El Salvador, even such highly specialized problems as deciding what the ideal runway length for a modern airport should be. All the year round, these questions come in for discussion and decision. Just listen to the range. Here are some samples.
Nicaragua wants a man to help them run their census for them.
Can technical assistance provide?
Togoland is trust territory. Should we allow it to enter an administrative union with the Gold Coast?
What is the council's view?
What is the most useful work we can do to reduce discrimination in the fields of travel and education?
Refer to the Subcommission for Protection of Minorities.
Korean schools are desperately short of textbooks. Can we help them with printing equipment and paper?
Send it to the UNCRA Planning Board.
Routine searches last week resulted in the confiscation of 400 kilos of heroin. The traffic is increasing. What international action can we take to reduce it?
Pass that to the Secretary of the Narcotics Commission.
How can Canadian progress in polio research be most effectively made known to doctors in Indonesia?
That's a World Health Organization matter.
There are only 13 television channels available in the VHF band. If we give you the four you ask for, other countries will have to go without. See the problem?
Item for consideration by ITU.
Arsenic, benzene, and other poisonous materials are regularly used in industry. They're dangerous to workers. Can ILO promote research on less harmful substitutes which will still do the job required?
By Pouch to Geneva.
What are you people doing in your part of the world about this juvenile delinquency problem?
For the Social Commission. What you've just heard is a list of questions, a fragmentary and partial list. They come from countries or groups of countries, and they demand answers. In most cases, the answers are forthcoming. In those cases where a question or an issue is important enough, and no immediate answer is possible, the matter is often kept under continuing review. Most of the questions in this category are the thorny or complex political issues, the ones we call the perennials. Often, issues are brought to the United Nations which have lain unsolved for centuries. They're bound up with intricate religious or ethnical factors, and progress is often slow. Like all major questions and most minor ones, these issues come into the forum. They are brought, in fact, to the conference table. We turn now to the conference officer.
The conference table has expanded, not only in size, but in scope. There are more countries around it, and many more issues are laid upon it for consideration. Its membership and scope would not have been dreamt of a century or even a decade ago. The United Nations family, its allied and associated agencies, form an impressive network of international cooperation. The councils, commissions, committees, subcommittees, working groups, what have you, all do a tremendous job. And mark this, it's done at the express wish of the nations of the world. The United Nations is merely an instrument to be used by the nations.
Now, what happens in UN conference rooms is often vitally important, sometimes historic. The fabric can, however, be technical, specialized, and on occasion, even boring to the uninitiated.
I must say, sir, on a point of order, that the purpose of my supplementment document A/AC12/14, corrigendum 2, to the Bolivian amendment to the Thailand resolution was to clarify the intent of the parties and bring the final resolution into consonant with the procedural proposals submitted by the four delegations.
Well, that, of course, is conference room language. Meaningless unless you happen to know the background from which it stems, and that background may be very important. At other times, the technicalities may be baffling.
If the per capita increase registered in the last fiscal year is maintained at 1.025% or better, then we may expect a relative rise in yield, calculated conservatively.
But almost invariably, the reason, the cause, the need is neither technical nor boring. And most of the time, the decisions reached involve you. Sometimes directly. The world's business is carried on all over the globe we inhabit. But the main center, the heart of all this activity, is the building I'm speaking to you from, the UN headquarters here in New York. In these steel and concrete buildings at the East River, there may be held as many as 14 international conferences a day. It's probably true to say that there is no important aspect of your daily life, from awakening to eating, working, traveling, reading, which has not a significant relationship to the United Nations. What happens in and to the United Nations is a tremendous concern to much of life you take for granted. You are, in fact, on the agenda. We all are. And each of us has a seat at the table. Your lightest footfall may echo in Sumatra, Mozambique, or Mexico. Your need may, though you don't know it, resound strongly in the halls of negotiation. And that is why we have invited you today, on this 10th anniversary of the United Nations, to take your seat at the table.
Our special narrator was Clifton Fadiman. This special program was Your Seat at the Table. It was prepared and produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio, presented and distributed by the U.S. Committee for the United Nations.